Blog Talk Radio.
If only I could see me as you see me, and understand the way that I am loved, would it give a hope?
Hello, 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 everybody. You are listening to Don't Give Up Radio. I am your host, Jackie Wayans, and I'm really happy to once again be with you this week as we really look into a subject that is near and dear to many women's hearts. I know it's near and dear to my own. And fellas, if you're listening, keep an ear close by because we've got something for you as well. Today we're going to be talking with Stefan. Let me get the last name correct. Can you say it for us, Stefan?
It's Labossière.
Labossière, I love that. Author of God, Where is My Boaz? And we will be speaking specifically to women tonight about understanding what it means to be preparing yourself, what it means to be looking for, understanding what has been hindering us from receiving the man that God has for us out there. So welcome, Stefan. I'm really happy that you're with us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So I want to get right into the concept of a relationship coach. And in many ways, we've heard about psychologists and life coaches. What is a relationship coach?
Well, it's pretty much the same thing as a life coach. It's just the focus is on relationships. And I think one of the easiest way for people to look at it is to view it as like a personal trainer for your emotions and your relationships and how you are going about things. And a lot of times people, when they hear relationship coach, they're thinking just romantic relationships, when in reality it's all relationships, business, personal, or family, romantic, everything, because, you know, the issues that we face, they're all connected in those different ways. You know, if you don't know how to communicate with your sibling, there's a good chance you may struggle with communication with your loved one or at work. You know, you still have to be able to apply certain principles in all of those aspects if you want to see success in that area.
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct with that. If you have struggles communicating in one area, you're going to have those struggles across the board. So as a relationship coach, you're really not just focusing on just the romantic side of things. It encompasses that, but it's not just that.
Exactly. And most importantly, it's a relationship with self. Because if you're not right with yourself, then you're not going to be right with anybody else. So people will come to me looking to solve their issues with their person that they're dating or they're with, but it's like we have to address the issues within you if we really want to get you into the right place.
That is key, and that is where we're going to be going tonight. I want to take a step back a little bit, though, and find out how you got into this work, you know, what made this your passion.
You know, to give a shorter version of the long story, you know, I've always had clues in my life I was headed in this direction, but I didn't understand it. Ever since I was young, I was always that person that people opened up to. I mean, I could know someone for an hour, and they would tell me some of their deepest, darkest secrets, and I wouldn't understand why everyone would feel so comfortable talking to me. As I got older, I was involved in a lot of different things, but I had an advising company, or, you know, you could say it was a coaching company, and I just wasn't really focusing all my energy on it. I always was a jack of all trades, but I learned you're jack of all trades, master of none, and that's not good. So once I got closer to God, that's when it really took shape. That's when I really understood this is my purpose. This is where I'm supposed to be. I need to drop all these other ventures and businesses that I'm doing and focus in on just this.
Well, talk to me about that piece, because I think even before we get into the subject matter, this actually connects to it in terms of how people find and hear where they're supposed to be at the right point in time in life. When you say that once you got closer to God, can you explain the events that led into that and what did hearing from him actually look like?
Well, to be honest with you, I was just experiencing a lot of different things that I just wasn't understanding. And in trying to figure it out, trying to figure out my life, I started drawing closer to God. And really it started because someone said to me, hey, you're gonna need to accept Jesus in your life. You're going to need to get to God if you want to figure this out. And at that time I was like, what are you talking about? You know, I believe in God, but I didn't have a relationship like that. So I didn't really comprehend. But I was always a person that just said, okay, you know what? It won't hurt to try, or it won't hurt just to ask God in prayer. And that's what I did. I remember just asking God, like, what do you want me to believe? What do you want me to do? Just show me, you know, and I'll roll with it. And he pretty much slapped me upside the head with some things that I couldn't deny. And that kind of got the ball rolling. And in getting closer to God, I kind of separated from so many different things that I was involved in, all the partying and acting all wild. And because of that separation, it allowed me to focus my energy on more important things. It allowed me to really take a deeper look into people, into myself. You know, it just started off a growth process. It's like, I consider it like my wilderness period. You know how Jesus went to the wilderness for 40 days, 40
right.
nights? That was like my wilderness period. Like for the next 3 years, it was a different way of life for me. And that really helped transform me into what I am today and really helped me understand people and relationships at a level that I didn't before. I mean, I always had a good above average knowledge and wisdom with it, but that period, like, magnified it. And then even after that 3 years, it went up another few levels, all because of my relationship with God.
Amen to that. And, you know, listeners, it's important for you to hear this because, one, is a lot of the things we're going to share tonight, anyone can enter in because they're principles for life. They're principles that apply to everyone. But Romans 10:9-10 says that if you confess with your mouth and believe in your heart that Jesus Christ is Lord, you shall be saved. And it really is as simple as starting with that prayer, and indeed he will start to communicate with you, and you will find your life being shaped and molded around. Tell me, how do you mesh your life as a relationship coach with your work and with faith? Because some might think they don't fall in line with each other. So how do you mesh the two?
Well, you know, I'll admit, for myself, it was a struggle at first, and not necessarily with my work, but just trying to embrace being this new man in God, but still like having certain character traits that I have from before. And I didn't know those were really, they could coexist or they were good to have. Like, I've always been a very ambitious, I don't want to say aggressive, but assertive person. And I found myself kind of being very humbled by the experience. And that kind of process kind of softened me up, so to speak. But I had to come to realize that, no, God doesn't want me to lose the fire in my belly the way that I was always going after things. It's just going after him in the right way and going after what he wants me to go after. So that's how I first had to combine it within myself. And then with relationship coaching and life coaching, I don't push my beliefs on anybody. I'm a firm believer that I'm going to represent what I believe as best as I can. I will speak on it when I see necessary. If you are a believer, then I'm absolutely going to go in on it. But if you're not, I'll still talk to you and still assist you, because regardless of what your spiritual beliefs are, the issues that we face are pretty much the same across the board. You know, but it is a different dynamic when I'm able to speak to that person from the spiritual aspect as well. And I also always view it like, you know, when you look at Jesus, he didn't go around forcing himself on anybody. He spoke. He pretty much had an attitude like, here I am. My love is here for you. My guidance is here for you, but you have to make a choice to accept it. I'm not going to ram it down your throat. So that's the way I kind of approach things. Like, listen, I'm not here to ram it down anyone's throat who doesn't want it, because I'm not great with scripture, but I know there's one scripture that was like talking about the fact that no matter what they were going to tell those people, they wouldn't believe anyway. But we don't always have that discernment. We don't always know who is that person that will listen and who won't. But in my opinion, we're called just to be examples. And being an example, you can have a greater impact on the person than just trying to force your views onto them.
Right.
You know?
Right.
When
and
people
what
start
I like about your conversation, so far, it's just the fact that you are not just someone who went off and got a degree in this thing. You're someone who's actually put themselves in a place to hear from God and to really allow this to flow through you. And yes, you're skilled at it because you want to be skilled at it, but people should also choose someone who has experience on multiple levels. And you seem to have both working for you there. Wanted to ask you, when it comes to the church, though, because you're right, you want to be able to open up what you have to everyone. But I'm wondering if when you're working specifically or reaching out to people who are specifically in the church, do you tend to meet any resistance to the concept of a relationship coach?
I think some people have resistance to therapy in general. Whether you are a coach, a therapist, it makes no difference. And to be quite honest with you, especially in the Black community, there's a very negative stigma on therapy. But I will say that I think that coaching is actually a little more accepted. People feel a little more comfortable with a coach. And it's gotten to a point where there's even clinical therapists who have gotten the title of coach added to their resume. Because people just seem to be more comfortable with the idea of seeing a coach versus going to a therapist.
That's interesting. Okay, very good. Well, then let's keep flowing with this then. With what you do, I know for the broad scope, you speak to both men and women in terms of this area. But in regards to this book, this was specifically for the heart of women. What led you down this path?
Once again, it was all God, because I had no intention on writing this book. I had a list of book subjects. Not one was this book. And what happened was last May, to be completely honest, I had a meltdown. And the meltdown was so bad, I was ready to quit. I was ready to quit coaching. I was ready to quit this whole relationship, life coaching thing, just everything about it. Done, go get me a regular 9-to-5, and that's it. And before I walked off the ledge, I said, you know what, let me pray. Let me pray. Let me not react because I'm just, you know, it's overwhelming right now. And in that prayer, that's when the book came to me.
Mm.
And it came to me in May. So at the end of May, I prayed about it. I probably started writing a little bit in July or in June, really started putting pen to paper in July, and I had it out by August.
Wow, and this is a bestseller. I mean,
yeah.
It's an Amazon bestseller, you know, other places, and that's not easy to do in today's society. It's very hard to move books off the bookshelves. So
exactly.
You tap into something. You tap into something. Now, when I was preparing and looking at the byline underneath God, where is my Boaz, it says, A Woman's Guide to Understanding What's Hindering Her from Receiving the Love and the Man that She Deserves. And I loved there that you chose to use the word receive as opposed to find. And I know that the Word of God says in Proverbs 18:22, it says, He that finds a wife finds a good thing. And I myself, being a single woman, I always feel like I am that precious gem that should be found, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what was your thinking as you chose to use the word receive versus find there?
Well, one of the biggest reasons why I use the word receive is because a lot of women have had love stare them right in the face. But because of lack of healing and the fact that they have not gotten over those past pains and disappointments, they were not able to embrace it. If anything, they ran from it, or they even self-sabotaged relationships because they could not handle the idea of being this vulnerable to this man. So in receiving, it's about allowing yourself to get what's there. A lot of times it's right there, and even with God's blessings isn't hiding somewhere. It's there. But we block our own path a lot of times in life. And if we would just remove those things and we would understand how to get to it, we would receive it. Because, again, it's there waiting for us. So that's the reason, one of the biggest reasons why I use the word receive, you know, because that's what it really boils down to. It's almost like God's trying to hand it to you, but you're like, nah, I don't trust it. I don't trust it. I remember the last time I was hurt. And that's why it's not coming.
Well, we're going to get into that right after this song called Beauty by Tiffany J, because it really does talk about that fact that we need healing as a woman. We first have to deal with some things within ourselves.
Take a look in the mirror and tell me what you see. A reflection of perfection, a self-proclaimed impurity. Be sure to evaluate each part of your being.
Jackie Wayans, we are talking tonight with the author of God, Where is My Boaz? And if you're wondering what does the name Boaz refer to, it is a Bible story in the book of Ruth. I want to make that clear. It's a Bible history in the book of Ruth. And basically, Ruth has the good fortune of meeting her Boaz. It is a man named Boaz, and after she had gone through losing her first husband and poverty and hardship, he's the one who owns the whole field, and she ends up being his wife. And it's such a great short book. I encourage you to read it. It's very easy to really read and comprehend and enjoy for anyone, and that's the book of Ruth. But now I wanted to ask, Stefan, do you think that in the telling of the story and in the teaching of this history in the church that we have kind of romanticized the book and we have failed to actually look at what the true chunks of nourishment that come from it, you know, what's really being shown to us here about Ruth and about Boaz and about this whole situation?
Yeah, I do think that it was very much romanticized, and I don't feel like it was being told correctly, which is one of the reasons why I feel like God put it in my spirit to even write about it. I remember seeing different blogs a long time ago about using the story to justify women proposing to men, just using the story as saying, you know, just wait, your Boaz is coming. And it's like, okay, no, there's more to it than that. You know, you have to understand what happened here. And I felt like that wasn't really being explained by a lot of people. I'm not saying no one has ever told it right. I don't know. But I know I haven't heard it the way that I was breaking it down. I felt like that's why we need to talk about the principles of preparation and positioning yourself, understanding the respect Boaz had for Ruth more than just how she looked, because that's another thing. I would see these stories talk about, like, Boaz looked at her as if he was in love, love at first sight, and it's like, no, that's not really what I see happen there, okay? Mm-hmm. In reality, he had high esteem and respect for her, and that's what made it so easy for him to oblige when she said, hey, I'm your wife, or you're my guardian redeemer.
Right.
So I feel like a lot of those core principles weren't being shown, and I think they're very important in helping women understand what they need to embrace in their life.
And we're going to come into that in just a second, because it's important to look at those principles, because if we don't look at it, there's no one that's going to come along and look at it for us. It is our job and our responsibility to take that on. And 80% of the church is made up of women in America. And I've heard all kinds of scenarios as why that is, that the church is too feminine, it's not militant enough, all kinds of thoughts, they're not enough men. What's your take on the dominance of not just the fact that there are women in the church, but so many single women, or so many women that typify that superwoman that is raising the kids and doing the job and doing all the functions inside of the church on her own and independently. So talk to us about the realities of that and how it's perceived by men.
Repeat that last part for me.
How it might be received by men or perceived by men in terms of women, you know, taking on so much.
Okay. You know, I think there's so many ways to answer this. Men, when it comes to men first going to church and the fact that women go more, you know, it just dawned on me even as you were speaking, and I felt like to really embrace God, you have to be submissive to him. You have to humble yourself as a man. And unfortunately, humbling and submission is not something a lot of us are taught or raised to embrace as men. We're you know, shown to be tough, do it our way, figure it out, you know, suck it up, all these different things. That doesn't really work when you're trying to walk with God. Okay, I mean, yeah, there's some of those aspects you can apply, but you still have to submit to his guidance. You have to submit to, you know, being humble before him and knowing it's not all about you. So I think that inability to embrace submission causes a lot of men to not really see church and see the relationship with God the way they need to, whereas women, that's a little more innate. to, you know, to submit to that authority, and not in the sense of anybody running that woman, but it's different for women. She can easily more embrace that. It's more in line with what that woman is or what's put in her naturally. So, like I said, that just kind of came to me right now. And I genuinely believe that has a lot to do with it, even though we may not completely realize that. Now, in regards to women taking on so much, you know, a lot of men nowadays are seeing it as, well, it's only fair. You know, women want equal rights. They want equal this. They want to be on the same level as us, so they got to do the same things as us. So some men don't see a problem with it, and they think that's just the way it should be. And then there's others who embrace a more traditional approach and feel like, no, you know, the man should be the protector and the provider. So it really varies on who you speak to. And I think also it comes back to a lot of people's childhood. There are some men, or there are a lot of men who are babied growing up, and that's a very unfortunate thing.
Or mommy.
They become,
or mommy.
Say it again?
Or they're mommied, right?
Exactly. Mommied. They become accustomed to this woman taking care of them, doing everything for them, and they're not learning how to hold themselves up. So when they become adult men, a lot of them are just looking to make a transition from their natural mother to marrying a woman who's essentially their mother that they sleep with. And I hate to make it sound like that, but that's what it pretty much boils down to for a lot of situations.
Yeah,
so,
no, you're absolutely right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think we need to do a much better job of how we raise men and what we're instilling in them. And I think we could change a lot of things, even with the whole fact that men struggle to express themselves because we don't teach our boys to talk and how to say how they feel without being judged or looked upon as weak. But if we start to instill that in them early, we can change the landscape when it comes to men and their ability to open up. And some people want to view that as soft or too, you know, feminizing the men. And it's like, no, there's a way to be strong and expressive. No one's saying let the boy whine and you know, cry over everything. Not that crying itself is bad, but you know what I mean. You know, excessively being sensitive. No, but he can still be in tune with that side of him and still be masculine and be assertive and still be able to lead a household.
Absolutely. I live in New York City, and I'm in the Bronx. And I hear it. I hear fathers and mothers when their little boys are crying. And they're just like, toughen up, you know, and they really just say, suck it up. And it's difficult because then what you're doing is creating that pattern where he's not going to be able to release those emotions in a positive way moving forward. But we're going to get to the men next week. But for today, part of the reason why I brought it up is because when women are in the church, and, you know, whether they're speaking to their pastor or someone about the fact that they may be lonely or they're waiting for their Boaz to come, they're really given the same pat answers. You know, we're told to pray, we're told to wait on the Lord, we're told to, you know, just get involved in the church and the work of the church, and as we're busy serving the Lord, he will, you know, answer us. And in this place of 80% women, our wonderful Boaz is just going to walk in one day and just sit right next to us. And it doesn't work out like that. So that's really why I was asking the question, because, you know, those responses don't really help us get to where we need to be as women. And so what are some of the things you say to that in your book?
Yeah, I totally agree that that's one of the biggest problems with the church. We're not giving practical guidance. The reality is that, well, at least I feel that with everything spiritual, it can be backed up with practical guidance. You know, we just don't take time to understand things and to study it and to really embrace why God said these things. I'm not one who believes God just said it just because. There's a reason he's telling us wait till we're married to have sex. There's a reason he's saying don't steal, don't kill, don't commit adultery. And we can explain that in a practical manner, because a lot of times it's hard for people to understand it when we're just quoting scripture. Mm-hmm. And if you truly want someone to embrace something, you have to help them understand it. And that's what I felt like was necessary in my book. It wasn't just about saying, hey, this is what God says. No, here's some practical ways of understanding why you need to do this, why this is hindering you, why this is a problem in your life. And giving them that kind of answer, I believe, is really helping. I really believe that's one of the biggest reasons why the book is so successful right now, because it has that balance of spiritual and practical, whereas you see a lot of other people who just go spiritual with it.
Right. Well, I have a practical question for you. I've been very open on the show about my marriage, my divorce, and you know, just living out these past 12 years as a single mom, raising my kids, being celibate, all that stuff. And so, you know, the question that comes up, or the issue that comes up, is, you know, people ask me all the time, well, are you dating? And I'll say, no, I don't believe in dating. I believe in courting. And it sounds like a very female and very strange thing to say, especially if you're looking for your Boaz. But what is it about this word dating? Because when I hear it, I just can't wrap my brain around it. So tell me, how do men perceive it, and how should women be thinking about it?
Well, again, it varies with each man. Some embrace it, some look at it all kinds of ways. Personally, I'm kind of like you. I'm not really a big fan of dating per se, not as defined by most in society, where it's this, you know, we're going into this situation with these expectations of trying to make something happen, and a lot of people get so involved too soon with these individuals because they're dating, and they feel like this is a necessary process. To me, friendship is more important. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to learn how to be friends first, and the reality is that we don't have to date, and technically we don't even have to be boyfriend and girlfriend. Boyfriend and girlfriend is not biblical. That is something that the world made to make it easier to get husband and wife benefits without the commitment. That's
wow.
It. Let's just call it for what it is. So people have now conditioned themselves to believe that you must go through the process of boyfriend and girlfriend to find your husband or wife. No, that's a lie. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who are best friends fall in love every day.
Right,
they never
right.
had to be in a romantic relationship to discover the connection they had and the fact that they could be very happy together.
Mm-hmm.
So
definitely.
by taking the route of friendship, one, we build a greater foundation. We also allow people to have more time to get to know each other, because that's the other problem with dating. Too many people go into dating with a mask on. Everybody's fronting on everybody, just trying to get their goal of this person, whether it's just having sex with this person, whether it's having a relationship with this person, or whatever it is, people are playing this game. But when people are friends, they're less likely to do those things. They're more open. The guard is down. You get to really get a feel for this person in most situations. And now you can make a better decision of, okay, is this someone I can really be with long term? Or are they just good, just being, you know, everyday or here and there friend?
Right, and you haven't lost anything in the process, you know?
Exactly.
The only trick with that is if, you know, one falls in love with the other and the other one doesn't, then you have to navigate that situation, which I'm sure is another book and another show all by itself. But in general, I absolutely agree with you that it is regular life and a friendship. Now, of course, if you're just going to work and going home and going to church, it makes it very difficult to even meet people and encounter people. And one of the things that I think Christian women need to do is just do the things that they love and enjoy. If you like, you know, ice skating or going to the movies or theater, whatever, do those things. Enjoy them. Enjoy them with your girlfriend, but enjoy them by yourself. You don't have to kind of, you know, shut life down because you don't have a partner.
Mm-hmm.
Time is going so quickly. I want to get into the deeper things here now. The reality is a lot of women have had to deal with things on their own. They've been mistreated, as you mentioned. They've been hurt before. And they might have gone from a place where they were dependent on somebody and it didn't work out, and so now they've become independent and self-sufficient. And when you step into that role, there's certain parts of you that became immune because of the hardships you went through, and there's certain parts of you that have gotten how to communicate and how to be in a relationship. Talk to us about how to now, what do we have to do to get back into that place where we actually would make a good partner for someone?
Well, I think the first step is in recognizing why you're independent. And that's important because the reality is for many women, it's not, they didn't become independent because they wanted to. They became independent because they felt they had to. They had no choice. They've been let down too many times. They don't want to be at the mercy of some man who's going to hurt them again. So by being independent, it's a defense mechanism. Once you can understand that, and it's not to say that independence or the ability to be independent is bad. No, it's a beautiful thing. But when it really stems from trying to protect yourself, what happens now is you go into a relationship still trying to protect yourself because you never address the deeper rooted issue. You never heal from what pushed you in this direction in the first place. So by first understanding that and addressing that, you can better equip yourself to embrace that relationship. Because, again, independence is not the issue, but a resistance to interdependence is a problem. Because in a relationship, you have to depend on each other. That's the way it has to be. You got to be a team. You know, there's no I in team. It's not going to work that way, especially if you have both parties acting in that manner. So I think it's just a matter of recognizing what's the root of the independence, being able to embrace that, hey, in a relationship, you have to let your guard down. You have to be willing to be vulnerable. And that is the struggle of almost every person who's been hurt in life, is being vulnerable again. And unless you're willing to embrace that, you're going to continue to see struggles in your relationship.
I'm going to play another song now. This one's by Mandisa, and it's actually called The Truth About Me. And it just echoes what you've been saying. We have to get alone with the Lord. We have to allow him to reveal those things about us that are the truth and take a good look at them. But there are also so many positive things about ourselves that we don't see that we need his guidance on.
If only I could see me as you see me and understand the way that I am loved. Would it give a whole new meaning to my purpose? Change the way I see the world? Would I sparkle like a star in the night sky? Would I give a little more instead of take? If I understood I'm precious like a diamond,
we both know it would change.
as women, we have to know the truth about ourselves. You know, if we don't romanticize the word and we really take a look at women like Ruth, women like Abigail — Abigail is my favorite female hero of the Bible — it is to understand that these women really had a firm grasp of who they were and who they were not. And in the midst of that, they allowed God to do what he needed to do in and through them. And that's how they, you know, Ruth wound up with Boaz, and Abigail wound up with a future king, David. Stefan, I want to talk to you now about the issue that women have with male packaging, so to speak. When we see a guy, we might see him initially as being, you know, just a nice guy, and someone else might look a little bit more edgy. People are attracted to various different things. What are some of the myths that need to be busted in terms of just, you know, putting guys into a box to say, well, he's just a nice guy, or even, you know, someone who might be labeled a bad guy, but you want to go in and kind of save them and believe that there's a redeeming quality in there that you can go and pull out. I think that one's a real danger. So can you talk to us about some of these male packaging issues that women will look at a guy and decide for themselves whether they should embark down that road or not?
Well, I think that one of the biggest misconceptions is just the general idea that women prefer bad boys. And when we say bad boys, we mean negative, good-for-nothing men. And the reality is that what she's attracted to are certain characteristics that a lot of these bad boys at least present. Even if they don't truly have them, they present them. Assertiveness, confidence, just that masculine energy. So as much as, yes, I want women to be more mindful of who they're choosing and trying to be with, I have to say to the men, understand that if you have those characteristics, assertive, masculine, confident, and you're a good guy, you'll have women eating out the palm of your hand. That's just to be honest with you, okay?
Right.
But what happens is we tend to use the label of good to deflect our deficiencies, to not look at where we come up short in a lot of different areas. We want to default and say, well, they don't want us because we're a good guy or a good woman. No. There's some
good guys finish last,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They want to believe good guys finish last, but that's not completely true, you know? So the other myth I think that needs to be debunked is that women, a lot of times, one of the reasons why some of these women are attracted to this because they're comfortable with the dysfunction. Because when you have not healed as a woman or as an individual, you will struggle to embrace that amazing man, all right? That good guy scares you. Believe it or not, the bad boy is the safer choice emotionally because he doesn't make her feel vulnerable. He may excite her. You know, he may intrigue her, but he does not make her feel vulnerable. But that good guy who loves her, who treats her like no other man ever did, that makes her scared. She doesn't know she can trust this because she's almost going to start to look for something wrong because she can't believe it can be this good. It's what I call too good to be true syndrome.
Wow.
And it's just too hard to embrace because she has not healed. So to me, the whole overall issue of bad boys and women picking them all the time, there's so much more to it that we're not discussing, and that's the reason why we keep seeing this problem happen over and over and over again.
Well, you know, I mentioned Abigail a little while ago, and she was married to a gentleman by the name of Nabal, which means fool, and I entitled this show No More Nabals, No More Fools. But in her case, you know, she was married off. She didn't have a decision to say, I'm not going to choose that person for my husband. But how can women really look at, as they're going through this, the process of knowing this person and falling in love with this person, how can they not be fooled or snuffed in? You know, what are some of the real things we should be looking at to see, are they a Boaz or are they a Nabal?
The first most important thing is a woman's intuition. Point blank, period. The reality is that in most cases, if I want to say all, but to be fair, in most cases, a woman's intuition has already told her if she has a Boaz or an Abel in front of her. But she will then rationalize and convince herself of all the reasons why she should give the Nabal another opportunity. And again, to drive home the point of lack of healing, when a woman has not healed, she'll actually convince herself of all the reasons why she should embrace the Nabal and convince herself of all the reasons why she can't handle Boaz. Because, again, it's too uncomfortable and scary to deal with the great guy. So she settles for the other guy. But she knew deep inside there was an issue. She knew deep inside this was not the man for her. So I can give women all kinds of extra things to look for, but if she's going to overlook her intuition, she is likely going to shoot herself in the foot every time.
Right. Excellent. And then that's a big deal between being 23 or, you know, 30. I think that, you know, people mature at different rates, but I think sometimes you have a lot of people getting married too young, too soon, to kind of really know themselves and develop into the person that they're supposed to be. I mean, that's just my thinking. I was married at a very young age, and at the time everyone was saying you're too young, and I didn't really think so. But somewhere around 28, 29, when I started to come into myself, I was thinking, oh, well, you know, I probably would, you know, gone down this road if I was a little more seasoned, a little wiser. Because that's when you can follow your own intuition, your own instinct, especially if you weren't raised in a family that supported you doing that. But healing is key. You're saying some phenomenal things, and our time is just going too quickly. Let's flip the coin a little bit. We're talking about, you know, we've talked about women who are, you know, afraid and choosing the wrong one. What about settling? How does that happen? You know, that moment where you say, you know, I'm 46, so I could say easily, well, you know, I'm 46, so it's now, you know, I guess I should stop being so picky, and, you know, whoever comes along, I guess that's going to be the one.
Well, settling stems from not embracing your value, first and foremost. You know, it's almost like if a Bentley is on sale for $200,000, if it starts to get too worried and think, well, I can't sell myself, it's going to drop its price. It's going to settle. But Bentley's not going to do that because Bentley knows what it's worth. Bentley knows someone is going to come along and pay that price. They just have to wait and present themselves correctly, and it's going to all work out. So that's what happens or does not happen with women. They start to second-guess themselves. They start to let their age concern them to where they think they can no longer get the quality that they deserve. And they end up falling into the trap of settling. And it backfires anyway because you're not happy with what you settled with.
Right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with understanding if maybe you had certain expectations that might not have been reasonable. Like if you're a woman who's saying to herself, well, my man needs to make over $100,000 and be 6'4", that's going to be hard. You know, so embracing that what God has for you can come in different packages, well, that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you know you deserve a certain amount of attention and love from that man, when you know you're someone who likes to talk on the phone and go out, and you settle for some guy who wants to sit on the couch, not do nothing, and barely call you, that's a problem. You know, and you're not going to be happy.
I hope we're listening. I know I am. Listen, give us a final word. I'm definitely going to be downloading your book on my Kindle. There's no doubt about that. But what would you say to women right now on this issue as just a final thought?
Don't be afraid to self-reflect. Don't be afraid to acknowledge that there are things you could do better in your life. You can't go around blaming anybody and everything else for why you're not getting what you deserve. You have the power within you to make changes. You have the power within you to create such an amazing peace and joy within yourself that's going to attract everything God has for you in life. So embrace that and be willing to take the necessary steps, and whether it include healing, just positioning yourself better, and just simply listening to God as to how you need to proceed in your life.
You mean God is not just going to snap his fingers and he's just not going to be able to...
Nope, he's not going to snap his fingers. We can't learn. We can't grow as people if we don't put in the work.
Oh, gosh. Right. Well, thank you for that truth. I really appreciate it. And I want to let everyone know that Stefan will be back next week, and we're going to talk on a different book. Get this title, man. This is just for you. How to Get a Woman to Have Sex with Her Husband. And, you know, that is powerful because it's a real issue, and it's not one that's often talked about or addressed, and it needs to be. We know that sex and finances are the two greatest reasons for divorce in this country, and to really look at the real issues, why is that happening? So I'm looking forward to you being back with us again next week and covering that. Can you let the people know where can they find you, where they can they find your merchandise, you know, how can they connect with you?
They can find me on my website, www.stephanspeaks.com. That's StephanSpeaks.com. On Twitter, at Stephan Speaks. Facebook, Stephan Speaks Relationships. And they can get my book, God, Where Is My Boaz, at GodWhereIsMyBoaz.com.
Wonderful. And definitely I would go to the website and get the book. It really supports the authors. Amazon is quick and easy and great, but if you really want to support the author, I would go to the website. It's a direct connection, and I'm thankful for what you do. And God has really given you insight here. You've said a couple of things where I'm going to play back the show and re-listen myself because I want to really get those points in because it's true. We, you know, women listen to other women on this issue, and that's not helpful. We need a man to step up and say, no, this is actually what you need. You know, this is what we're dealing with. So we're going to go out on a wonderful song called Perfect. We're not perfect. But if we actually put ourselves in the position of hearing from God, he's the one who perfects us, and we're perfect in his eyes. So women and men, I just encourage you to wait with expectation and wait with anticipation, knowing that God is faithful. He will definitely answer prayers, but like we said tonight, there's definitely work that we have to put in. The things that we have to do to, like with anything else, to bring forth manifestation. We have to do some seed time and harvest, right? Okay, until next week, be blessed and be your own best hero. Don't let yourself down.
You are the potter and I am the clay. You found me broken and still found a way to mold me back into what I'm supposed to be. Other people walked away, but you stay because you see I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for you. You love me despite of all I have gone through. You gave your life so that one day I would see. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect with you. You, you, perfect with you. Answered prayers I forgot I had prayed. You kept the dream that I had thrown away. When I missed the mark, Lord, you still met the need. Other people walked away, but you stayed because you see I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for you. You love me despite of all gave your life so that one day I would see. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect with you. You wrap me in your arms, you treat me like your own. I'm never left alone. You're watching over me, making me believe in what you see. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect for you. You love me despite of all I have gone through. You gave your life so that one day I would see. I'm not perfect, but I'm perfect with you. You, I'm perfect with you, I'm perfect with you.